You mean you just came out here to visit me? Holly realized that she was surprised, too.
Yep.
I told you that, didn't I? You did, but I thought...
You thought I was bullshitting you.
Well... Holly felt her cheeks burning.
Yeah, I guess I did. A little.
Pancho glanced down at the protein slices on her plate.
I don't know. Maybe I was.
A little.
Truth is, I don't know what I want to do.
Malcolm's afraid you'll become a citizen and then run for his job.
Me? Hell no. I've had enough sitting behind a desk. I made all the executive decisions I'm ever going to make. Never again.
She said it with such fervor that Holly wondered what was behind her sister's outburst.
Anyway, Pancho went on, I want you to get to know Jake, and I want to see more of this guy of yours.
Raul?
Yeah, Raul.
Sounds like a flamenco dancer.
Holly smiled. He's an engineer from New Jersey.
Raul, Pancho repeated.
He looks like a real downer, you ask me.
I didn't ask, Holly said pointedly. And he's not a downer. He's just... Well, Raul wasn't one of our original people. He was an engineer at the Jupiter station. He came aboard when he had an accident while we were refueling at Jupiter on the way out here. Applied for citizenship after the trouble we had with those religious fanatics. They beat him up, too.
And he decided to stay here?
I think it's because of me, Holly said.
Well, well.
Growing somber, Holly confessed. Thing is, Ponch, he's given up his chance to go back home because of me. That's a load.
You like him?
Holly nodded, a little uncertainly.
You get along well?
Oh, yeah, sure.
In bed?
Her chin went up. Like you said, that's none of your business.
But you've got no complaints.
A hint of a smile sneaked across Holly's face. No complaints.
So? What's the problem?
I think that sooner or later he's going to want to go home.
To New Jersey?
It's his home. His family, his friends, they're all there. He misses them. He was at Jupiter Station doing his 2 years of mandatory public service.
So you're scared of him dumping you?
And that makes it tough to make a real commitment.
Which increases the chances of him dumping you.
Catch 22, said Holly unhappily.
You could go back Earthside with him, you know.
Holly's eyes went wide. And leave Goddard? I couldn't do that, Punch. I'm somebody here. All my friends are here.
And all your family, too, Pancho said gently, even though I'm not sure how long I'll stay.
This is a good place, Punch, Holly said earnestly. It's got everything a person could want.
Maybe,
Pancho said, a slight hint of wistfulness in her voice.
It's a big solar system, though. Lots of places. They've rebuilt the Ceres habitat, enlarging it, even. And they're finding more on Mars every day, just about.
Holly took a good long look at her sister as Pancho rambled on about the solar power stations being built on Mercury and the new cities being dug into the moon's battered regolith. She realized that Pancho had a wanderlust, a longing to see new places, to travel across the breadth of the solar system. That's what's brought her here to Saturn, Holly realized. She thinks it's to visit me, but it's really that wanderlust of hers. Holly found that she felt almost relieved about it.
Oswaldo Yanez felt almost delighted that the poor man had mashed his thumb so badly. His hours of duty at the Habitat's hospital were almost always so boringly quiet that he welcomed an opportunity to actually practice medicine. The Habitat's population was mostly young. Even most of those whose calendar age was climbing up there took rejuvenation therapies that kept their bodies youthful. Yanez was considering rejuve therapy for himself, although he had told no one about it yet, not even his wife of 32 years. He was still vigorous, his dark hair still thick and luxuriant, but he had added nearly 10 kilos to his weight since joining this habitat, and he worried about that. Too much easy living, he knew. but his determination to exercise and go on a diet always melted away in the presence of his wife's cooking. As he cleaned away the blood, he saw the technician's thumb wasn't all that badly mangled. "I was working on the main water pump," the young man explained, "down in the underground. My power wrench went dead, poof, just like that. When I tried to figure out what was wrong with it, the damn thing snapped on again, whacked my thumb real hard." "It's not serious," Yanez assured him. "I'm going to extract some stem cells from your bone marrow, culture them, and then inject them back into you to rebuild the damaged tissue. You'll be fine in a week or less." The technician nodded, but kept on muttering about his power wrench. "Shouldn't have crapped out on me like that," he insisted. "It was like it was trying to mangle me, you know?"
Vernon Donkman frowned at his desktop screen. "This shouldn't be happening," he told himself. Donkman was the chief financial officer of Goddard, a position that sounded impressive to the uninformed until they learned that he was the only financial officer in the habitat. Still, his was a very responsible position, despite the fact that virtually every financial transaction among the habitat's citizens was done electronically. The bank's computer handled all financial links with Earth and the other human settlements throughout the solar system as well. The frown that etched Donkman's lean, almost gaunt face was engendered by the fact that the bank's central accounting system showed an anomaly. The master account didn't balance. It was off by only a few hundred credits, but it should not be off at all, not by a single penny, Donkman told himself sternly. The problem was easy enough to fix, he knew. Simply liquidate the unbalanced amount from the habitat's internal account. That would balance the books, but the thought irked Donkman mightily. Accounts should balance without jiggering. It was his insistence on such purity that got him exiled from Amsterdam in the first place. Someone high up in the hierarchy of the Holy Disciples had been bleeding off cash from the church's banking system. Donkman had tried to track down the embezzler and found himself accused of the crime and exiled to Habitat Goddard. The memory of that injustice rankled him, but this tiny misbalance in the habitat's account aggravated him even more. The amount involved was too small for anyone to deliberately have stolen it. It was a mistake, somewhere in the accounting system, a simple mistake. But try as he might, Donkman could not find where the mistake originated. At last, his wristwatch alarm buzzed. With a reluctant sigh, Donkman pushed himself up from his desk and headed for the cosmetics clinic. Everyone was getting enzyme injections to turn their skin golden tan. He didn't want to be the only one among his acquaintances to look like a pale-faced mouth breather.
28 December 2095. Nanolab. Malcolm Eberle felt distinctly uneasy inside a nanotech laboratory. Not that he had any religious scruples against nanotechnology, he simply shared the same fear that most people had about an outbreak of uncontrollable nanomachines, mindless microscopic monsters chewing up everything in their path like an unstoppable swarm of soldier ants. The thought made him shudder inside. He knew his fears were grounded in solid fact. Nanomachines had killed people in the past. Back when Dr. Cardenas had first joined the habitat, while Professor Wilmot was still in charge of the interim government, the old man had insisted on all kinds of safeguards before he'd allow Cardenas to set up this laboratory. Why, just getting into this lab was a major struggle. You had to pass through a double set of heavy doors, just like an airlock. Cardenas had to keep the air pressure inside her lab lower than the pressure in the rest of the habitat, just to make certain that none of the virus-sized machines could waft out on a stray current of air. Urbane seemed uneasy, too. He must be really desperate, Eberle thought, if he's considering using nanomachines to fix his probe down there on Titan. If Chris Cardenas sensed their apprehensions, she gave no sign of it. Perched casually on a tall stool, one elbow leaning on the top of the lab bench, Cardenas was wearing a comfortable, light, short-sleeved sweater of baby blue and denim jeans. Urbane, as usual, was in a jacket and carefully creased slacks. No tie, but he had knotted an ascot inside the collar of his shirt. Eberle himself wore a loose tunic over his slacks, as the dress code he had promulgated called for. Hardly anyone outside the habitat's administrative staff paid much attention to his dress code. "We've been working on nanos for several